all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, that would be me, and welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Monday, July 24th. Nice to have you along here. Coming up, State Assembly Rep Alex Jores was among nearly 100 state-level leaders from around the country who were invited to the White House last week to discuss ways to make quality child care more accessible and affordable. And we will look forward to talking with the representative coming up at the bottom of this hour. As a reminder, if you missed our last hour where we talked about the Barbenheimer effect and more, you can catch us as a podcast. You can either subscribe at all the usual places, Apple, Spotify, etc., or you can go to the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us, where every show that's produced by Civic Media is turned into podcasts, and you can listen on an hour-by-hour basis to each episode. And again, we'd love to have you along, either live on all these Civic Media radio stations or through our Facebook pages or podcast, however you want to do it. It's great to have you along here for Up North News Radio, with a reminder that Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media, but we are pleased as punch that they allow us to visit with you from 6 to 8 every morning and talk about what all we do. Sharita Booker, our social media manager, was on in the last hour to talk about some of the most clicked Up North News stories of the past week. And tomorrow morning at 6:30, Christina Laurie will have the uplift, some of the uplifting stories that she puts in our daily newsletter, which comes out about 5 a.m. every weekday. You can sign up for that newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. Over on our website, if you missed our recent radio segment about it, we tell you all about the state's new Green Ribbon Commission on Clean Energy and Environmental Innovation, and how it's going to administer a Green Innovation Fund. That's a mix of both public and private dollars to invest in new projects that will reduce energy costs, it will reduce pollution, they will expand access to energy that is environmentally clean and affordable. We talked to Assembly Representative Katrina Shanklin about that recently, and you learn much more in the story on our website at upnorthnewswi.com. The big story this week in Wisconsin is the EAA Air Venture celebration for 2023, which makes Oshkosh the world's busiest airport for a time. And it's something where, as I look at this article from Fox 11 in Green Bay, hundreds of thousands of visitors will come from all over the world. Last year, that included 2,000 international guests from 92 different countries and six continents. And Dick Nepinski, the EAA Director of Communications, said that they could very well top that total again this year as people come along to, you know, celebrate all things aviation. And again, that international number only takes into consideration the folks who check in at the international visitors tent. It's just become a tradition for some families who, again, come from countries all over the world. And Fox 11 has that up on their website. And obviously Oshkosh Air Support and others here at Civic Media will be talking about this, you know, throughout the coming days, and celebrating everything that is about Air Venture. In somewhat more serious news, but it's something I feel like we should take a little bit of time on, it's, again, the whole notion of whitewashing history. And yet another egregious example from Ron DeSantis's Florida. What he and others have done to that state is nothing short of criminal, including crimes against history. His State Board of Education, according to an article in the Washington Post, has unveiled its new standards for the instruction of African American history in public schools. And this editorial talks about some of the more horrendous elements of it. They will now teach students that the slavery system, which was once constitutionally protected in this country, in which enslavers bought and sold human beings, according to Ron DeSantis's Florida Board of Education, there was an upside to all of that. in addition to being subjected to, you know, murder, rape, beatings, being maimed, enslaved Black people, quote, developed skills which in some instances could be applied for their personal benefit. So, as the editorial notes, Florida's children will now learn that slavery was in part a beneficial job training program, and that Black Americans share the blame for the violence that white mobs inflicted upon their communities. What DeSantis is doing here, in his words, would be a crusade against woke indoctrination, when what it really is the continued indoctrination of white supremacy through the continued whitewashing of what really happened in American history, including the, you know, the unsavory parts of it. And as we discussed in our last hour, then continuing to indoctrinate some white people into thinking that this is an attack on them or an attack on grandpa, when this is really about history and the real things that happened and the real positives that all people, white, Black, and otherwise, can have on the future, but only if we're willing to be honest about the past. When we come back, we're going to have an update on the Brewers taking on the Atlanta Braves over the weekend as they head into another home series this week against the Cincinnati Reds. We'll also get the full weatherology forecast and much more later on in this hour. We'll also talk about affordable daycare next. You're up north. That would be Jennifer Lopez. The birthday girl is 54 years old today, actress, singer, and dancer with her first top 10 hit. Time for an update on the weatherology forecast. And as I was noticing around Wisconsin, you know, the temperatures, there were a lot of reports of fog or haze or mist. In the Chippewa Valley, it quite clearly said the conditions were smoky, and it was really telling in these early morning hours, and of course all day yesterday as well. So we are far from done with the wildfire smoke and, you know, everything that it's been doing to us in Wisconsin and across the upper tier of states. But let's find out more about the fog, the haze, the heat. It's going to be a hot one this week. And Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology joins us now to give us all the details on the full Wisconsin forecast for this Monday. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, and as you mentioned, it does look like an air quality alert is in effect for much of the state today as that smoke from the Canadian wildfires makes its way through. So definitely something to keep in mind today with the areas of smoke and haze. Otherwise, sunny skies beyond that for most today. A slight chance for showers and thunderstorms develop for central and west central Wisconsin this afternoon with a blend of clouds and sunshine developing as well. Slight chance for storms into the evening hours for those areas too with a marginal risk for severe weather. So definitely something we'll keep you posted on throughout the day today. Highs in the mid to upper 80s primarily, 90s around southwestern Wisconsin. Tuesday, mid to upper 80s for southern Wisconsin, Milwaukee to Madison, then 90s expected for Richland Center up towards Wisconsin Rapids and for western Wisconsin as well. Sunny skies tomorrow with some areas of lingering smoke around Wausau and Oshkosh. Wednesday, slight chance for showers and storms for most except for around Amory and Baldwin where they will expect to have sunny skies for the day, upper 80s to low 90s across the board. 90s expected for Thursday with sunny skies, and then by Friday, looks like a hot day though slightly cooler, back to into the mid to upper 80s from Amory to Oshkosh and down to Milwaukee, lingering around about 90 from Waukesha over to Richland Center, with a chance for showers and storms for everyone on Friday as well.
All right, Jennifer, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Hope you have a great day.
You too.
There's Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology joining us at 62 degrees up here in Chippewa Falls. Madison reporting 61, Oshkosh 64, and Hayward, folks listening to the Buzz of the North, 63 degrees there right now. The Milwaukee Brewers unfortunately messed up a great starting performance by Julio Teheran. He went 6 innings, gave up 1 run on 3 hits, but the bullpen was not able to hold on despite a stellar performance of late by the bullpen. But all it took was reliever Elvis Peguero's first pitch to Atlanta's Ozzie Albies in the 8th inning, and that 3-run homer erased a Brewers 2-1 lead, and eventually the Brewers would lose to Atlanta 4-3. The Braves took 2 out of 3 over the weekend, though the Brewers are still in first place in the National League Central Division, up by a half game over Cincinnati. And those same Cincinnati Reds are here. Yes, another series against the Reds taking place at American Family Field tonight and tomorrow night and Wednesday afternoon. Colin Ray will get the start tonight. Over at Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM, 1100 AM. That's where you can hear the Brewers in the Fox Valley. And if you're in the Richland Center area, tune in to WRCE News from the Center, 107.7 FM and 1450 AM. Coming up in 15 minutes, just under 15 minutes, Representative Alex Shores will be here to talk about affordable daycare. It's something that we've talked about quite frequently here on the program, in part out of a sense of disbelief, maybe, that you could have an entire political class that is against affordable daycare for working families, even as they continue to try to talk about economic development and jobs, but you can't really separate the two. And Representative Jurors will tell us more about that coming up in our second half hour. But in terms of the workplace and how we continue to move into a post-pandemic period, there was a story late last week from Tom Dakin at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel talking about how downtowns all over America, and I would dare say around the world, have faced a decline in office workers as so many more people found new workplaces, either at home or in the suburbs or other areas. But in Milwaukee, you have a downtown that is outpacing its peers when it comes to people returning to the office, at least part of the time. Part of it is that downtowns are looking to rework their streets for cycling and walking. They're looking to create more public spacing, according to new research from the University of Toronto. And in rankings compiled by the university, Milwaukee has one of the nation's better downtown recovery rates. They do that by measuring mobile phone data at downtown restaurants, stores, and other points of interest in more than 60 U.S. and Canadian cities, so that you not only get a sense of how downtown is attracted to employees, but to visitors and to shoppers as well. And downtown Milwaukee's activity level from December to February was at 76% of the level prior to the pandemic. The average let me rephrase that. It was 76% of its level prior to the pandemic. Salt Lake City was at 139% because of a big influx of new residents. Meanwhile, you have San Francisco, which has only seen 32% of its pandemic level visitors and workers, as many tech workers continue to work remotely. Milwaukee ranks 16th out of the 63 North American cities that were measured. And again, it's not that everybody's coming back to the office full time, the article notes, but that there is some hybrid activity that probably is the best of both worlds. You know, the workplace is changing more than ever. I even noticed this weekend through Civic Media that the radio station group continues to build nice new studios. Obviously, we've talked about the one on State Street that is now opened up down in Madison, so that poor Aaron is not broadcasting from a tiny closet. He's now broadcasting from a larger, much more beautiful closet, and we appreciate that. And I know Aaron does as well. Mostly, Aaron, you appreciate where you are, yes?
Oh, absolutely.
That just kind of, yes, I love being here. Yes, please continue my paychecks. Yes, sir. But did you happen to see in one of the Civic Media boards the new photos from Chippewa Falls? That was probably just in one of the other channels there.
No, but I did not see those.
So the Chippewa Falls studio is coming along nicely downtown. It won't be ready for a while. The construction is done, but you still have to put in, a control board and hook up all the other bells and whistles. And don't we know a thing or two about the challenge that brought just to the State Street location?
Oh, yeah.
It's one thing to build it. It's another thing to wire it.
Yeah, and the engineering team has a couple, two, three stations to worry about this in. Only like 18 stations across the state or somewhere in that vicinity. Who knows? The number keeps growing.
which again, I will say, as not a Civic Media employee, is still pretty damn cool.
Oh yeah,
that somebody's coming along and taking these radio stations and investing in them, investing in local radio, and giving people a place to produce Wisconsin-based content. That part's pretty awesome. So eventually we'll see the Chippewa Falls one as well. But again, that's the construction. My overall point being the hybrid activity of working for me right now is a home office. And it's great, but it's no studio. I can't have another person here. There's a lot of things that I can't do here. But I like having the option to do the show from home or from on the road. And we're just going to continue to see more of that as people might still have a downtown hub. There might still be a downtown location, but it really is going to be up to the employers themselves to set up a model that works best and not just to demand everybody come back to the office just because they have to. I think that we've already shown from the reaction of workers who, you know, vote with their feet and vote with their resumes and vote with their 2-week notices, that isn't always necessarily a healthy thing for a workplace to do. But Milwaukee, between the lakefront and some of the other amenities, it's working out quite nicely so far. So congrats to Milwaukee for continuing to be an attractive place to live and work, no matter what your own state's legislative leaders want to tell you. No matter how much people who don't live in Milwaukee try to demonize Milwaukee and Madison and other big cities, the residents of Wisconsin cities have proven quite ably that they like where they are. They like the amenities that are here, as are the ones in the small towns. And look, we're not going to get back into the whole Jason Aldean, you know, try that in a small town controversy. We addressed that back last Thursday. But the fact of the matter is we all get to, again, vote with our feet far more often, and Milwaukee continues to prove that Wisconsin cities are great places in which to live and work, and for that, we should all be quite thankful. I wanted to just give a brief mention of a guest coming up this week. We're scheduled for Hans Breitenmoser tomorrow. We'll have Kristen Lyerly on Thursday with Hometown Health. On Wednesday, first, as usual, in our first hour, we'll have Melissa Baldoff with our weekly climate check. But we've got a special guest Wednesday at 7:30, an author who is going to be joining us to talk about a particular era in American history and the impact that was had here in Wisconsin as well as Minnesota. And it primarily is about the Minnesota side of things because of the new book that just came out called Into the Bright Sunshine, written by Samuel Friedman. And it talks about Hubert Humphrey's speech to the 1948 Democratic National Convention. And you may say, why? Why are we talking about the 1948 Democratic Convention? Well, first off, because it's the 75th anniversary of it. Second, because Hubert Humphrey's speech, and he was a complete unknown outside the city of Minneapolis at that point. He was the young mayor of Minneapolis in 1948. But he gave such a rousing speech that did so much to turn the Democratic Party from the segregationist party of the many decades prior into the party that embraced civil rights. And you had, again, something that was a case of Republicans had been more likely to support civil rights. And so we will talk to, you know, our guest coming up, Samuel Friedman, on Wednesday morning about Wisconsin's Republican senator back there in the 40s and 50s, Alexander Wiley, from here in Chippewa Falls. Our other senator was a guy named Joseph McCarthy. And so we'll ask him all about, you know, how other Democrats reacted to Hubert Humphrey and other people pushing the party to finally embrace civil rights. And so Samuel Friedman will join us to talk about his new book, but also what the senators from Wisconsin had to say about that entire process So look for that interview on Wednesday. And if you can't catch that on Wednesday, then again, we hope that you will tune in as part of a podcast or listen on the website whenever you're able to. So we're going to be talking about Hans Breitenmoser tomorrow and the Wisconsin Farmers Union. We're going to be talking a bit about the latest drought declarations, the assistance that's being provided to farmers in certain Wisconsin counties. So look for that at 7:30 tomorrow. But coming up at 7:30 today, State Representative Alex Shores will be here to talk about his visit to the White House and the continued push, amazingly, a fight. You have to have a fight for affordable, accessible, quality daycare in Wisconsin. More after this. You're up north. State Representative Alex Shores represents the 79th Assembly District, which is part of the city of Madison and Middleton. Wanakee, let's see, there's Westport, Windsor, Burke, all in there as well, elected to the State Assembly in 2022, formerly on the Dane County Board, and can also add a visit to the White House on his list of things done. It's the one thing he got done in terms of a trip. What he'd really like to get done is making childcare a bit more affordable and accessible in Wisconsin, and that was the subject of goings-on at the White House, and so Representative Shores joins us now. Alex, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Pat. It's great to be here with you on a Monday morning.
Yeah. Now, so let's talk about the White House trip, and then we'll get into the more serious issues about, you know, why you were there. But how does that come about? How does a state representative find out that, you know, your advocacy is leading to having you join folks from around the country at the White House?
Sure. Well, I think that I was speaking about this issue on the assembly floor during our budget talks, and I got rather frustrated when my Republican colleagues were not interested in funding childcare in our upcoming budget, and we're in the process of cutting it out. So I made a rather passionate speech about the subject and how the $340 million dollars that we were going to use to keep our childcare industry stable in Wisconsin was instead going to be used for tax cuts for folks making over $500,000. So I got agitated about that, and I'm not sure if somebody from the White House was watching or what happened, but a week later or so, I got an invite to come and join a state's convening at the White House to talk about what other states were doing and try and share ideas and also hear about what the administration is doing to lower the cost of childcare.
And that's an important point about that. It's not just that the Wisconsin legislature is doing this, but of course the Biden administration and leaders in other states as well. I frame this as an ongoing and a puzzling fight for affordable childcare. As I mentioned, teasing this at the top of the show, I had to keep the tease rather short because otherwise I'd have to write more about how historians are going to look back on the year 2023 and try to figure out why Republicans are against accessible, affordable, quality childcare and against affordable health care and against good wages and against fighting pollution. But they are boycotting Barbies. They are shooting cans of Bud Light. They're banning rainbows. So I guess U.S. politics is equally bad. You know, for folks that don't really want to pay close attention to this, I don't expect you to answer the question. I have to ask it anyway, because you listen to the floor speeches in the state assembly. What's the beef against affordable childcare and the Child Care Counts program? And what do you tell them in response?
Well, look, Pat, this is the top issue that I've heard about since I was elected and sworn in January. Whenever I meet with folks in my office, whether it be parents or providers or even industry leaders, this is the top issue that I hear about. And folks are looking for workers and they're not able to find workers. And it begs the question, why? Well, if we're not able to provide affordable and accessible childcare in our state, we're gonna struggle with finding workers. So that's what I don't understand about why my Republican colleagues won't get on board with making sure that our families has access to this need. But I will say what I heard from my Republican colleagues on the other side, they had said that this was deemed, you know, too expensive, and that even the joint finance co-chair said something like parents should just expect to pay more for quality, and that's just something that they should prepare to do. You know, I think that we have the money, we have the ability to support our families here in Wisconsin. Again, going back to what I said at the beginning, these my Republican colleagues were prepared to give, I think it was $320 million in tax cuts, essentially the same amount that we could have funded childcare accounts. They were prepared to give it to folks making more than $500,000 in Wisconsin. So that's ridiculous to me.
Well, that's the thing about the point that they're making is that, well, parents should just prepare to pay more. And I guess my response is, why aren't we saying that to millionaires and billionaires instead? Is, you know, to live in a quality state like Wisconsin, where we want kids to have a good childcare, you might have to pay a little bit more. And instead, remember, you're spending either way. Tax cuts are spending cuts. You're just deciding we're not gonna spend as much on this priority, so we can spend it to reduce somebody's taxes. And I'm still, again, failing to understand why certain folks aren't seeing the equivalency of that. That do you want to make your investment in a millionaire, or do you want to make your investment in the middle class families of your district? Now, we've talked about childcare counts started as federal pandemic relief aid. The federal aid was going to run out, but again, this still appears to be a secret to many Republican legislators, but we had a $7 billion surplus that we could use for this. So I'm still not seeing the actual harm that would have come from using part of the surplus to continue to keep childcare affordable.
Right. I think that this is what folks are asking for. This is what all of our constituents are asking for. It's not just my constituents in the 79th district, although I have heard a lot about it. The Joint Finance Committee went across Wisconsin and heard from Wisconsinites from Eau Claire to Beloit to Superior to Door County. And they all said, providers, parents, and industry leaders, that we need to make childcare affordable and accessible. And I'll say this, as far as the cost of childcare, the cost of childcare has gone up 26% in the last decade. And so when the Joint Finance Co-Chair is saying parents should just expect to pay more, they have already been paying more for childcare. And so I think that's something that we obviously need to do better in Wisconsin. And I'll keep talking about it. I was at the White House talking about it. I'll keep talking about it when I'm going to doors, which I have been doing this summer. And that's a consistent message that I've heard from people.
And so that's what brought you to the White House, where nearly 100 state level leaders from across the country came in. How would you frame the way things were structured there? Was I get the impression that there's almost like a level of brainstorming going on there. What are you guys doing in your state? How are you paying for it in your state? What's the federal government going to do? What was it that structured, or were these primarily kind of loose conversations? How would you frame the discussions of affordable child care at the White House?
Sure. Well, I'll say this. We, in those nearly 100 legislators, including myself and Representative Jill Billings in the La Crosse area, we were joined by folks from 41 states across the nation. And it was encouraging to hear what our national leaders are doing and what other states are doing. But it was also hard to hear when we have states that are fully funding childcare and they're talking about, okay, we've now fully funded childcare, so that's it's affordable to folks 200% over the federal poverty level. And now we're looking at seeing how we can make sure that our education providers are paid a living wage. So that was something, sorry, my printer is going off right now.
That's all right.
That was something that we heard. So I was able to bring ideas back to my colleagues here in Wisconsin, talking about what states like California are doing, states like what Minnesota are doing. and making sure that their early education workforce is being paid what they deserve. So, and what they need for quality education and childcare. So that was what I was hearing.
And it's not just states, it's other countries. Pretty much every other developed country is doing more. You know, we call it child care, and people think it's just, you know, kids are, you know, playing with toys or whatnot. It's early childhood. It's early childhood education and early childhood development that other countries have figured out is a good investment. And so can you talk a bit more about that end of it, that you're not, this is not babysitting money. This is an investment in the development of our children and frankly, of our work, of our future workforce as well, right?
Right. And I think that, we have to realize that if we're investing in our kids from birth to 3 years old, that investment is going to be seen very clearly in their future years and in income return and economic development. These are things that we need to think about where you're right. It's not just kids going to a place to hang out for a while. This is something that, you know, parents need, but then also the kids that are, you know, we're investing in are really going to benefit from the development that we see at this stage in their lives. I have a 3-year-old right now, and the vocabulary that he has developed because he's able to go to a place with invested educators and invested you know, students his age are just incredible. So that's something that I want to see across the state.
And the reason we're still talking about it today, even though the state budget is done, that debate's over, the governor has signed it and applied some partial vetoes. We talk about it because there are still things that can be done about this. Even though the state budget is done, there remains a budget surplus, even a larger one now because of the partial vetoes made by Governor Tony Evers. And so he essentially extended an invitation to Republicans who lead the legislature to say, hey, come on back in the fall session and let's rework that income tax cut so it's not so heavily skewed toward the wealthy. And we still have ways that we can make childcare more affordable and do a host of other things. I'm going to admit I'm pessimistic that any of that's going to happen. So I'll be the pessimist. You can go ahead and be the optimist. What's the best case scenario this fall if a few more Republicans actually start listening to their constituents rather than their leaders?
Well, I think my Republican colleagues are going to have a lot of pressure on them this fall as 25% of childcare centers are looking at closing this year because of the lack of funding child care counts is getting. So we're going to keep, my colleagues and I are going to keep going around Wisconsin and making sure that the voices of those who are looking at a closed child care facility are being heard. It's going to be tough for parents when they have to either look at leaving the workforce or paying a huge amount of their income in childcare costs. So I think that my Republican colleagues are going to start hearing more and more about that. I think I was just looking at some numbers just in my county of Dane County, two childcare providers just closed last month. This number is even more drastic if you go outside of this county. I think that over half of Wisconsin is in a childcare desert where there's not enough childcare, it's not affordable. So I think that my Republican colleagues are going to start hearing that. I would say to your listeners, Pat, if folks have a story about childcare and or lack of childcare, that they should share that with their legislator. Even if it's me, I'll be able to take that story and share that with my colleagues and make sure that they're hearing it consistently until we fund childcare across Wisconsin.
And I've got less than a minute left, but I know you also put forward an op-ed a couple of weeks back about the short-sightedness of Republicans cutting funding for the UW system because of this temper tantrum about diversity, equity, and inclusion programming. So in just a couple of seconds, do you feel like those programs can be properly defended and adequately funded in the future?
Well, look, I think just like you said, we're at one side cutting childcare funding for 0 to 3. And then the other side, we're taking the future of our workforce, the UW system, and saying that we're going to cut $32 million from them as well. I think that if we want to make sure that we have the workers for the future, if we want to make sure that people are staying in Wisconsin and seeking out Wisconsin as a home state that they want to live in, we need to fund both of these things, and especially the UW system. DEI programs support veterans, first-year college students. These things are, they impact everybody. So we need to fund DEI programs. Fortunately, the governor's veto restored those 188 positions.
But still, you got that overall cut, which is, right. is something that's got to be jumped on. Representative Alex Shores, right. It's always great to talk to you. Come back again soon. Have a great day.
Thanks, Pat. Great to be with you.
All right. Terry Bell up next with 3 things you need to know to start the week. You're up north. We normally play a tune from the old 97s for Terry Bell, Civic Media News Director, who joins us Mondays to tell us about 3 things you should know. Aaron, you're here to tell me you didn't violate that at all, that it's just a different song.
It's just another one. This one is called Oppenheimer.
I see what you did there. Okay, very nice. Well, let's get into that with Terry Bell. First off, we've never really talked about your fandom of the old 97s. Where did that come from?
Well, just being exposed to them, gosh, they first made a splash in the 90s. In fact, I think they were featured in a Vince Vaughn, Jennifer Aniston romantic comedy, I think, at some point in a scene. But they just sort of kept showing up, and my friends kept recommending them. And they tour quite a bit, and they get to Wisconsin about once a year. So I started going to shows. They are a great live band. They are great entertainers. They put on a heck of a show, and I've been a fan ever since.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. And then, of course, the Oppenheimer, the title of that tune leads me to ask, what did you think of the Barbie movie? Or maybe you saw Oppenheimer. I'm not sure.
I didn't see either one. I plan to see Oppenheimer this upcoming weekend, and I may very well stream the Barbie movie. I hear it's actually pretty clever, as a pretty smart movie. So I may see it one way or the other. Yeah.
I think that, it was one thing for me to hear, yeah, the Barbie movie. And then you say, and I'm not, you say Greta Gerwig, and I go, okay, I don't know all my film directors. I'm not, the fan, but I know that she's won enough accolades and such that this is not going to be some kind of a throwaway. It's going to be, clever, smart, funny. And so I'm not surprised that it's being so well received.
I'm not terribly surprised either, but it just from reading things, it could have gone either way in terms of whether this was going to be something that adults could enjoy or whether this was just going to be fluff. And I guess it has some things to say, and it says it in a very clever way. And that appeals to me. So I think I'll check it out at some point.
And that is the main thing. If you want something geared toward kids that still is going to do well, you give the adults a little something. You throw a little something their way that's not going to be too mature for the kids. They might miss it entirely, but the adults will go, oh, okay, yep, I like that. Thanks for thinking about me. Let's get into 3 things you should know to start the week, as told by Civic Media's news director. And let's start with the fact that a soldier with ties to Racine, a last report, continues to be in North Korea. At least we think so. Has anybody heard anything since he dashed across the border last week?
Absolutely, yes. Actually, there's an update on that. North Korea says it is in talks with the United Nations, the U.S.-led United Nations force in North Korea. So those talks are underway about getting Private King back to the United States one way or the other. This is the first acknowledgement from North Korea of any of this since then. It's been almost a week now that a Private King apparently, instead of boarding a plane, ran to the demilitarized zone, blended in with a tour group, and then bolted to the other side of that border, which it would be fascinating to know his thought process. He was on his way back to the United States to face disciplinary action. So you could imagine, I don't want to make any assumptions, but, you know, in his mind, he may have been thinking he was escaping the consequences of some trouble he'd gotten into earlier. But then he, you know, ends up in North Korea. I don't think if he had thought that through, that would have been the choice he made.
No, you're right. It's absolutely in the did you really think this one through as far as what you were going to have next? All right. Well, the fight to defend democracy goes on, and that includes, you know, going after efforts to suppress democracy and voters, whether it's in district lines or the way and the manner in which people can vote. What's new on the democracy front?
Well, there is a lawsuit that will, in all likelihood, go before the Wisconsin Supreme Court at some point, as we've been talking about for quite some time now. The ideological majority on the court will switch on August 1st when Janet Protasiewicz is sworn in. And so there's a lot of anticipation about rulings that will come. And a group called the Elias Law Group, a national democratic law firm, has now filed a lawsuit seeking to change some rules that the current, soon-to-be former Supreme Court enacted concerning drop boxes. They made absentee ballot drop boxes illegal. They also required witness signatures on absentee ballots and required that mistakes on ballots be corrected by 8 o'clock on election day. That was the current court. The lawsuit anticipates that the next court would overrule those things, and that's what the lawsuit seeks to do to, make voting more open again. These changes were made during the pandemic that the Supreme Court overturned, saying that they were no longer needed and that perhaps that the Wisconsin Elections Commission overstepped its bounds. But the lawsuit says that actually these are, these make voting accessible for everybody, are legal and perfectly fair to enact, and that's what this lawsuit seeks to do. It's going to be the first of several things that come up. People anticipate that this next Supreme Court is going to take on a raft of issues right away. That's not going to be the case. There are a lot of things that this court will take up, but it'll be a trickle. It won't be a rush.
Yeah, exactly. All right, and our third thing to know about to start the week is that there have been new natural disaster designations from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Secretary of Agriculture due to not drought, but drought-like conditions. And that means that the farmers in some counties are going to be able to have some emergency credit extended, because we talked about the smoke and haze earlier this hour, Terry, but the dryness itself is still hanging on quite stubbornly.
It sure is. And at least for farmers in all or part of 27 counties, they may get some help if they've seen significant losses due to 8 or more straight weeks of drought conditions during their growing season. So those farmers have until March 18th to apply for some help there. And this would come in the form of emergency credit and loans. I'm not seeing any word of any grants or anything like that. But this would be something, a lifeline to help these farmers who, experienced, got way behind on the progress of their crops. I have to say, driving around southern Wisconsin this weekend, I was very encouraged by what I saw in terms of just, the appearance of the crops to a guy like me, a layman. Certainly, it hasn't changed the fact that farmers suffered greatly summer.
And very much varies. It can vary from county to county. And if you want to learn more, go to farmers.gov from the U.S. Department of Agriculture to learn if this might impact you. Terry Bell, thank you so much. Great to start the week with you. Have a great day. All right. And that's going to do it for us here. We'll have Hans Breitenmoser on tomorrow to talk about some of the latest about the drought-like conditions that we continue to have here. Remember, you can follow us on our website, upnorthnewswi.com and upnorthnewswi on social media. Have a great Monday. We'll see you back here tomorrow from up here on the lake, where it's always a beautiful day up north.